Interpreters, I am Luana Holland Moore. I'm the Director of Fellowships and Interpreter Strategies for the African American Cultural Heritage Action Fund at the National Trust for Historic Preservation. The Action Fund is the largest preservation effort ever undertaken on behalf of African American historic sites of activism and achievement. And we're here to tell you more about what that is like.
What's up, interpreters? This is Heather from the National Association for Interpretation, and I'm your Corporate Engagements and Partnerships Manager.
What's up, interpreters? This is Song. I am your NAI conference and I don't know what I do. Conferences, webinars,
everything.
Web stuff, all the things. And we are super excited to have Luana Holland Moore here with us on this podcast. What's up, Luana?
Glad to be here. Thank you.
So I was really excited when Heather brought up your name to be on this podcast because I had literally just looked at Architectural Digest. And I saw the article with Brent Leggs, your executive director, as he was hanging out in LA at the Watts
What's
Museum.
What's happening? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was just like, here we go, full circle. I am so excited to speak with Luana. and then Heather, you met her on a PIP course recently.
Yep, Process of Interpretive Planning course, or that an online course we did together. It was awesome.
It was.
That is so cool.
So, yes.
It was.
So, okay, just going off of that, Luana, what was a key takeaway that you took away from that course?
Well, I think if anything, really thinking about what the site as a whole and what that experience will be for visitors who come there from the moment that they arrive to the moment that they leave. What will they take away from that experience? What will their experience be like while they're there?
I really appreciated him calling it a visitor experience plan rather than the interpretive plan. That also gave me just sort of a visual of what you're saying from the time somebody pulls into your parking lot to the time they get in their car and leave, or bike, or however they're getting there. Yeah.
And I think that's so important for, you know, doesn't matter what the site is or what you're trying to do in terms of always thinking about, okay, this person or these persons have taken the time to come out to my site. What do I give them? What do I want them to feel or know when they leave? What do I want them to brag about to other people?
And where are they coming from, right? Like what is maybe their day like? Are they coming from out of town? Are they in town? Is it a school group? Is looking at the demographic information to me was also super interesting.
So Luana, do you work for the National Trust of Historic Preservation? Is that kind of the umbrella?
Yes, we're a program. The Action Fund is a program of the National Trust. So we are part of the National Trust.
a huge program, right? Like $25 million.
Oh, we're $95 million.
Oh, excuse me. I read the wrong information.
We're a $95 million granting fund now. We were created in 2017 in response to the events in Charlottesville, Virginia. And since then, it's just been amazing to see its growth, both in terms of the number of grantees. We now, with our most recent Preserving Black Churches cycle, we have, I believe, over 270 grantees now. And we're talking a range of sites, rural sites, urban sites, very well-known places by very well-known people, such as Nina Simone's childhood home in North Carolina, John Alice Coltrane's home in Dix Hills, New York. But we also have places such as small Rosenwald schools, Washington Rosenwald schools in rural counties. Places you just wouldn't even think. It's just, I love seeing what comes in every year.
So you give the grants. How are you funded?
We have funding from organizations such as and foundations such as Lilly, Getty, the Ford Foundation, Mellon, and we work with them to provide funding for our granting programs such as Preserving Black Churches and Conserving Black Modernism, as well as our national grant program.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That is so cool. So the kind of the slogan for the American Cultural African American Cultural Heritage Fund is tell the full American story.
Yes.
So how, what are the challenges? I mean, there's obviously obvious challenges, but because you have such a wide, diverse, well, it's big and diverse as far as, you know, what it, who's involved, right? You said like a park or a church or a big museum or a really big institution. What are some of the challenges that you have in really getting that interpretive message across to some of the visitors?
Well, one thing that you always have to take into account is that for African-American historic sites, and honestly, so many sites related to historically marginalized communities, that they often have sites and stories that have gone untold, whether it is through omission or just outright not being told. As a result, it just means that being able to produce these stories and acknowledge and recognize these sites and give them visibility and give their stories visibility is so important. And some of our grantees have been in places that are not traditionally associated with African American history. One of our recent grantees was in Sheridan, Wyoming, and it was essentially to help to create a trail that will mimic the route taken by the Iron Riders. And the Iron Riders were African-American soldiers who in 1899 took a trek on bicycle from Wyoming through Montana all the way to St. Louis. And this is a story that when I first heard it was like, whoa, I think everybody needs to know about this. This is incredible. Places like Montana, just being able to tell these stories that people don't know about. And some of the challenges come into play of just really thinking through what's the best way of doing so, for one thing. And of course, the resistance that comes from places that might not want those stories being told. But one thing about history and being a historian is that we know that they should be. They absolutely should be. And it's part of our, I feel, responsibility as historians to be able to tell that story anyway.
Are you feeling the pushback of truths being told and stories being told?
Well, I don't feel pushback, and we haven't received pushback in terms of the stories being told. Often for our grantees, it's very site specific, and they're telling the story anyway. And so I know that in terms of, I was at a site, and when we were talking about, for instance, we're trying to get funding for the site, and they were telling us, oh, I don't want to be recorded or anything on record because it could affect the funding. It could affect our funding. And I just don't want any like fallout or consequences for speaking out and trying to get this funding for this site because of the crackdown, so to speak, on history, whether we're talking about CRT and just telling this history, which is what it is, to be honest. And so I can't think we're seeing pushback on our end at the Action Fund in terms of our own sites, but from personal experience and interactions with some grantees and some colleagues, you're hearing the stories from the trenches.
I would assume that a lot of these places, you know, they're not a full-blown museum. They're not a, you know, necessarily a big physical building. For example, we have this year's National Conference in St. Augustine. And when I went there for a site visit, you know, we went over to Amelia Island, and there's American Beach. which was founded by Florida's first Black millionaire, right? He owned a life insurance company. And so while there isn't necessarily like a physical building there to tell this entire story, they did have, I believe the National Park actually owns part, well, some of that area. And so there is a lot of non-personal interpretation happening there with signage and stuff. How do you think that you can get a good message across for something that, you know, meaningful and important just on a couple of signs?
Well, one thing, of course, you have marker programs, and that is, I like saying, well, you know, I'd like to see a marker. If we can't get anything else, at least have a marker for that acknowledgement. But it's true. What do you do? How do you interpret a place that is not there anymore? And actually, that is one of the challenges that we tackled in Akron, Ohio. Sojourner Truth spoke in Akron, Ohio in 1851, where she delivered her iconic speech. But the church that she delivered it in no longer stands. And it's now the headquarters for the local United Way of Summit and Medina. And we were like, well, how do we tell her story? How do we commemorate this iconic speech by this iconic woman for at somewhere that's not there anymore? And it had been an effort for years to create a commemorative site in that space. And it received momentum, that is, with the recent centennial of the 19th Amendment. And so we were brought in, the National Trust and the Action Fund were brought in to act as a resource to help create a new commemorative site to Sojourner Truth in this space. And it's been 3 years. In 3 years on just on my end, the effort's been going on for over a decade plus, but I've been working on it for 3 years as the project team lead for the National Trust and the Action Fund, and the site will be opening on May 29th on the anniversary of her speech. But it was, how do you tell that story when the space no longer exists? And it was important to really think through, well, what connects the Journal Truth story to us today? What are those through lines linking us from the past to the present? And there were so many, such as thinking about things we're still debating, such as who gets to identify as a woman, or that feeling of being an outsider because English is not your first language. Sojourner Truth actually spoke Dutch as her first language. Just maybe being the only woman or the only Black woman in a space, in a group. These are issues we still think about, issues we still talk about, even things like controlling your image. We love doing social media today. And Sojourner Truth took her images, her carte de visite of herself everywhere she went. And as well as her own narrative, she wanted to control her story, her image.
You know, that's interesting because I was reading a little bit about you, Luana, before this interview. And and you say historic preservation is about so much more than just old buildings. It's about history, heritage, yes, and community, and how we all have a part to contribute. And I imagine with something like that, with the Sojourner Truth journey that you've been on, that you have to include that whole community as part of that project and the interpretation in it.
It was very important. We engaged the community from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. We held meetings. We asked them, well, what do you want from this space? What can this space do for not just the Akron community at large, but the Black community within Akron? What do you want this to be? And they told us. And we tried to make sure to incorporate that into the design, the usage of the site itself. And they are so proud. They're so excited for this site. The entire community, the entire city is so excited for this to finally become a reality. One trend that I've been seeing is the increase in wanting to use AR and VR, that is, in interpretive experiences. And I like to tell people, use it within the context of your site. Use it in a way that really does enhance the message and the story that you're trying to tell, and that it shouldn't be used just for the sake of trend. That it should be thoughtful intention, thoughtful intent behind why you want to use this, like you would any other interpretive tool. And because that's something that I've been seeing a lot in terms of our grantee applicants. And I think as interpreters, we're always thinking, what is the future of interpretation? You know, once upon a time, we visit a site, you get a rack card or a brochure, and that was it. And or you just reading the signs that are on the walls. But nowadays, there are so many options that are available in terms of technology that we as interpreters is constantly changing. So we also have to constantly change how we view how we do our work. How do we want visitors to engage with what we're trying to present to them?
So if I had a space in my community that could maybe benefit from a grant or some help from the National Preservation Fund, how do I go about that? How do I, what is the submission process or explain.
We do have a call. We do have a call for our grant programs. And they are throughout the year, depending upon which grant program it is, because we have our national grant program, Conserving Black Modernism, Preserving Black Churches. We also have our Historically Black Colleges and University Cultural Stewardship grants as well. And you can apply and find out more information by coming to our website, savingplaces.org, and going to our grant section. And I like to tell people, please apply. If you think that you have a site, don't be daunted by it. Please apply if you feel you have a site or a project that would be perfect for this.
So they do come to you. Do you ever go looking? Is there any part of this organization that tries to find places that maybe could use some financial aid?
Well, you know, we tend to be out in the world a lot. So between, you know, hearing word of mouth sometimes, you know, people will email us. I know one time I received a phone call, and it was a pastor who was telling me about how his church needed the windows stabilized. And I was like, oh, okay, tell me more about your church. And it went on, and I found out that, oh, wait, you're the last church standing from the 1921 Greenwood Massacre in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And that those windows that he wanted stabilized had the names of the survivors who helped to rebuild the church inscribed upon them. And these are the type of stories that come through to us and are just amazing, just on a regular basis. I look forward to seeing every year what projects come in through our submission process, what are people telling us about, because one thing about being with the Action Fund National Trust is that it gives us a national view on what people are doing project-wise across the nation.
I can tell that you love your job.
I do.
How did you get interested in history?
My goodness.
Yeah, for so many of us, right? For a long time, boring. I mean, that's not true. But it's not always in school, at least when I was growing up, presented as an exciting thing to learn. So how did you get involved and interested and passionate about history?
I have always loved history since I was little. I was one of those kids. And my great aunt Jeanette was our family historian, and I used to go with her riding around the rural countryside of Louisa County, Virginia, as she interviewed elders and got their stories and was doing family history. And she even took me to the Library of Virginia to do research. And I'll never forget, she wrote down an ancestor's name on a piece of paper, loaded up a microfiche, handed me the piece of paper and said, find them. And I couldn't have been any more than 7 or 8 years old, but I loved his, I begged him to take me to like historic site. And so I feel like everyone has that spark. Everyone has that person that made history something more than rote dates and events. So I had my aunt, I had my 8th grade history teacher, and I remember how the entire class for like days couldn't stop talking about gruel. And we were just like obsessed with like gruel and just like, oh my God, what does that taste like? But it was because he made this really real in terms of the day-to-day of what history was like. Because as I told, I love to go talk to classes myself. And I told a class recently, I think that sometimes people forget the story part of the word history, because that's what it's really all about.
I mean, so Anne Jeanette made it relevant to you, right? We talk a lot about that in interpretation, keeping it relevant. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And that can, that can bring out some passion and interest in folks.
I think every kid has that person that makes history really real for them somehow.
So the role of an interpreter is really important, because not everybody does like history, right? Not everybody is real excited about it, but we have the ability to get people excited about it, to spark some interest, to get them thinking. So you recently, as we mentioned earlier, attended the PIP course with Heather. What do you think is the role of interpretation in preserving these historical sites and telling the whole story?
Well, I think that interpretation is really important, because you can get people in the door, but if you cannot convey to them the reason why this place is here, why it is important, then you have potentially lost them. And that's not something that you want, particularly when we're talking about historic sites, because it's so easy, they can be so easily lost when people don't know the story. And all too often we see places being torn down or demolished that either the community is in uproar about because it was somewhere special to them, but perhaps no one else outside of the community knew its importance or how special it was, because they did not know its story. So to me, interpretation work and being able to talk to visitors or talk to others about what makes this place special. Because one thing about an actual historical site that you can visit and be at is that you have the ability, that tangible ability, to be where they were and touch what they touched. And it's a, I feel like it's a much more visceral experience in a way too, to actually be on site. And interpretation plays a part, as any of us who have experienced bad interpretation, I hate to say it, know full well that an experience that isn't a good one in terms of the interactions with whomever is doing the interpretive work at that site can absolutely ruin it for a visitor. I know, because I've been through some. And afterwards, I'm not thinking so much about, oh, this was a really wonderful site, but, oh, I can't believe they said that. And you don't want that. You don't want that. You want visitors to come to your place and understand the story and what makes it special.
I loved the conversation we had. And I'm not sure if you were part of this, Luana, about the, I think I said something about preserving nature. And there is it created a whole conversation about the fact that we don't preserve nature. We preserve buildings, and we preserve sort of places like that that have structures, but we don't talk about preserving nature. I got a little schooled that day on the word preservation and how we use it in interpretation too.
I think it's a thought of we preserve buildings, we conserve nature.
That's right. Preserve buildings, conserve nature. That's it.
But I mean, but there are elements though that when we're thinking about nature and preservation, when we start talking about viewscapes, when we start talking about landscapes, then the word preservation, even though it might be applying to natural features or natural elements of a site, it is preservation.
That's right. Or you talk about you were talking about the iron riders.
Yes.
And the trail, right? I mean, you'd sort of want to preserve that. I mean, it's in nature and you sort of want to preserve that trail, I imagine.
And, you know, we've had many grantees for whom a trail has been their interpretive solution. And honestly, it's something I encourage also, particularly if it's one where it's multiple sites, because I say it's a win-win situation for all the sites involved, because each site can help to promote the others. And I tell people, it's like, look, don't be scared to go and talk to your other historic site colleagues and neighbors. You can all work together. It's great for everyone involved.
Yeah, again, that community you want to create.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And a community, they are the stewards of these historic sites. They're the ones that you want to be proud of the stories that those sites tell. And by having that support of the community, engaging them and making them feel like they really are a part of this place that they share, it's important. It really is. I can't stress the importance of community engagement enough.
So Luana, how did you get involved in interpretation?
I got into interpretation work early because when I was in high school, I was chosen to be an intern for the Corcoran Gallery of Art in Washington, D.C., and where they trained me as a docent in their education department. And I had an opportunity to lead groups through and man the information desk and interact with visitors as a high schooler. And I recently spoke to a high school class and a young woman came up to me afterwards, oh my gosh, I really want to do the people side of this. How do I get started? And one of the ways I recommended was, I was a high schooler when I first became a docent, and that you should look into that as an opportunity to be able to get your foot in the door and do this work. So definitely contact your local historic site and see about becoming a docent. It's a lot of fun and it's a great way to get started in this work.
Absolutely. We're definitely looking more and more at a younger audience in interpretation. I mean, we know we're aging out as a profession. And so we've definitely focused more with, we have a young professional council now through NAI. So yeah, agreed. Starting earlier is possible.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much, Luana. It was great to talk to you more, to get to know you more. The PIP course was, we didn't really have a chance to sort of chat. So this for me is awesome. Appreciate you being here.
Like I said, I think Heather and I could sit here and talk to you all day, but
yes,
we do have to wrap it up. So again, just thank you for your time, for your insights, and thank you for, you know, jumping on the PIP course.
Thank you for having me.
And interpreters,
that's what's up.